she said that she has a mantra every time she goes on stage, and that's, you know, please let me get out of my, let me get out of the way.
Because, I love that.
Isn't that beautiful? Because it's like, get out of the way, don't get it of that, you know, that flow that can occur, that creative flow that can occur, you know, between someone presenting something and someone receiving it. And, you know, that is holy. There's something very sacred about that when we take too much kind of self-observation and ego and insecurity out of it.
Hello, and welcome to Why Not Both, the podcast all about how to lead your best creative, passionate, multifaceted life. Over the last several years, I interviewed over 100 artists on how to do, well, just that. And I learned a whole lot and realized that I should share some of these interviews again because there might be a chance that you, oh my dear listeners, did not get a chance to hear all, I think, 132 of them. So that brings us to about now. Our guests had some really amazing things to say, so I really, really want as many people as possible to hear these interviews. So if you are tuning in now, please head over to your favorite podcast platform and subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss a single episode. And you can also hang out with us on social media. We are on Insta and TikTok as Why Not Both Podcast. So for this week, I decided to re-release the interview that I did with Grammy Award winning, I love being able to say that, musician Allison Russell. In our interview, we talked so much about the power of collaboration and community when it comes to creativity. And in Allison's Grammy speech, she actually talked about just exactly that, about how our community is actually what makes us successful. So I admire not just her music, but the way that she uplifts those around her. So I could not be more thrilled to share Allison's voice with you. I hope you enjoy our interview.
Welcome to Why Not Both. And I'm sure that you have done many a recording on Zoom now.
Yes, Zoom life. It's the Zoom life.
Though my producer saw you at a music festival, which I was so excited that she went to a music festival. And I was so excited to hear about you playing there. And I was like, yes. What was that like? And have you been playing out live more?
So cautiously, yes. You know, I mean, I think depending on which festival it was, the first one that we did was actually Newport Folk Fest. Yeah. And it was so wonderful. It felt safe yet transgressive because, of course, it was the first gathering that I was part of. And but it also just was so joyful, you know, to see, to be able to feel the energy, you know, the circle of energy that occurs at any, hopefully any live show that goes well. It's not a one-way transmission. It's a kind of a loop of energy that goes back and forth between, you know, the creative people on the stage and the creative people in the audience.
Yeah.
And, it was just joyful. You know, it really did feel like a family reunion, you know, the folk family reunion. And it was wonderful. And I was honored to get to curate, you know, one of the sets, the closing set on the Sunday night of Newport. And and so to be able to kind of invite some of the artists that I've admired most and never thought I would get a chance to work with, you know, someone like Chaka Khan. And also to invite, you know, up and coming artists that I think are just extraordinary, who deserve bigger platforms and more people hearing them. Folks like Sunny War and Yasmin Williams and Amethyst Kia and Joy Oladokun and Celise, you know, like all of these. I was able to, Adia Victoria, bring all the Kashana, Cam Franklin, you know, I was able to bring a lot of women together that I deeply admire, just whose artistry has kind of gotten me through tough times in my life and through the pandemic. And it was just, just a joyful thing to get to be in communion again.
Oh, I love how you put that, in communion. Like, that aspect of the back and forth, I think, is really lost in, like, I love live streams. Like, really well done live streams are entrancing to me, like, especially when people put a lot of effort into, like, all the different lighting and all this stuff. But it's like, what it misses is that energy transfer between, like, the performer and the audience, like, that synergistic feeling.
Yeah,
because even though, like, obviously, you know that you're watching someone do something live, and then the person, you know, as the performer, it's so funny, like, I've only done one live stream, and I felt kind of like I was playing, like, live band karaoke with my own songs.
Yes.
Like, I was like, it's like, there's this like psychic disconnect there.
And then there's the strangeness of looking at your own face sort of mirror imaged and trying to imagine that you're looking deep into the eyes of someone else who's receiving this music, you know, it's quite surreal. Yeah, it is.
Yes. Like, that's so interesting that you bring that up. I was reading an article last night about how we actually sometimes don't like looking at videos or photographs of us that aren't mirrored, because we're so used to looking at ourselves mirrored when we take, for instance, like a selfie.
Right.
Like, we sometimes are like, whoa, who is that? Because we're used to looking in a mirror. And so when we see what someone else sees, it, like, we have this cognitive dissonance about it.
I always put it on the speaker mode. So then, you know, at least that feels a bit more natural, because then your face comes on when you're talking and I get to see you, you know, when you're speaking. And then of course, when I talk, I have to look at my own face that I don't need to look at anymore. But, you know, it's that, yeah, it's the try and make it as lifelike as possible.
Yes, because it's very strange, the observation of self during this time. And I'm so glad that you mentioned, like, creating this communion of others during a live performance, because in a way, self-reflection is, like, amazing, and, like, I'm huge on self-reflection and meditation, all those things, but, like, then you have to integrate it into, you know, when you're interacting with other people.
Yeah, it's, and it's just, you know, I definitely am someone with an overactive anxiety muscle, and I just, you know, the constant, I need to find ways to not go down the rabbit hole of the inner spiral.
Right.
And I, you know, being a mom has really helped with that, obviously, because my daughter pulls me out of that, you know. She and pulls her dad and I out of it, and we you know, our pandemic sort of things that we did for healing and self-care, we started a garden, and we adopted a rescue puppy, and Millie the moocher, and she's just she's brought so much joy to the whole family, and particularly my daughter, who's 7. You know, she was 6 when the pandemic began, and it was just so tough on her as an only child, to be isolated with all adults. And we were lucky in that we had my sister Ana Teixeira living with us, and my chosen sister Yola living with us as well. And so, you know, she did have at least these two other adults that weren't her parents to kind of, you know, bounce things off of. Which was helpful. You know, we were very lucky to be together and to be, you know, to have a space that had a big yard where we could dig a garden and grow a garden, and we were really, really lucky. We were renting, you know, a house kind of outside of Nashville at the time, out in Madison, that had big, almost like an acre behind it. So we really felt our privilege in that way, having that space during the intensity of the lockdown, you know.
Yeah,
it's been interesting, you know, to be, and to the very roundabout long answer to your question, that yes, we've had a cautious return to touring.
I completely agree with you. And you spoke to something particularly in the back of my mind. I was thinking about your child, that it's like, as adults, we get used to these, like, ways of thinking, that it's like, okay, we can expect what comes next. Like, we have this base of experience. And so when everything is kind of called into uncertainty, that's like extremely distressed. And then it was like, would you like some more uncertainty? And we're like, no.
Yeah.
No, we've had enough of that. Thank you. Yeah. and contrasted with, like, for instance, like I think about your daughter, and I think about like one of my best friends from high school. Like the last social event I went to in 2020 was her son's second birthday. Yeah. And then the next time I saw her was to drive her to her second vaccination appointment with her kiddo. So I hadn't seen him for a year. So he's three now. And I thought about it. And to us, that was like, yeah, really sucked not being able to see my best friend. Like that was like, oh man, like we've been close since we were 15. This is really weird. Yeah. But for him, that was a third of his life.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
And so like, it was like getting reacquainted where like seeing it through his eyes, like he's really great about masking and he's totally like with the program of like how to be COVID safe because like he doesn't have other expectations, whereas like adults have other expectations. And so we have this like completely different view of it than he does. And so it was really interesting seeing it from his point of view. Like one, he was so excited to see me simply because I have a lot of garbage trucks on my street.
So he's into them. He's like, this is great.
That was his pandemic experience, was like garbage truck watch. Like I got so many videos from her of him like sitting at the windowsill, just like, and she told me like there was one day that there were like two trucks, but they got stuck because like one was going one way and one was going the other, and like they live on a hill. And she messaged me and she's like, I swear this is like his Coachella.
That is so wonderful. That is so wonderful. We started bird watching. That was our thing. We started feeding all the Tennessee songbirds in the backyard, and that was so joyful too.
Oh my God.
And you're right. I just think let the children lead the way, to borrow a line from my friend Adia Victoria's song, South Gotta Change. You know, let the children lead the way, because they are really, I think, showing us, teaching us how to have grace within this experience. That you're right, we have these expectations and we're tired of it all, and people are in different levels of denial and misbehavior.
Yeah. And I was just like, I'm casting such a side eye being like, yes.
Yeah. the kids are showing so much more fortitude and grit, and
that's
bravery in this situation than a lot of the adults are.
Exactly. Like, I'm trying so hard to hold space for my friends who are parents and my sister who's a parent. Like, my nieces are both the same way. Like, they're completely on board with everything going on. Yes. Simply because they're like, oh, this is how we get to keep each other safe and see our friends. We love that. Like, they just take it at face value that's like, because they're 11 and 8 now.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And so
that's it's really close. So Ida's 7, she'll be 8 at the end of December, and her cousin's 11.
Oh my God. The phrase like lost the thread really does capture it, where it's like they're focused on like in some ways what I would consider the important things, like, do you get to see your friends? Does everyone get to stay safe? Like, those are the things that really, really matter to them. Trying to be a person during that while supporting your kid is really hard.
Yeah, no, it was definitely challenging, and it is challenging. And there's so many things that are coming up for them, and, you know, and fear and anxiety and depression, things that just were, you know, all of the kids are having fallout from it, I think. But you're right, they're also getting on with it. They're also just like, we want to be together. We want to have as much life as we can. And if wearing the mask all day at school is how we do it, then fine. That's what we're doing. You know, they're not having the same kind of live free or die reaction, you know, that's what I mean, literally having that reaction. It's like,
oh my God. Have you found that like any of this has made you turn to creation, or has it made you like pause on creation? I guess like, what's been your relationship with creating songs during this time?
No, I've been writing a lot. I've been writing a lot, and I've been songs and poetry and prose. I've actually begun writing a memoir that's kind of interspersed with poetry. And just recently, you know, had a literary agent approach me about it. And so I've begun working with this wonderful literary agent named Meg Thompson. And I'm currently working on a book proposal.
I'm
trying to finish sort of by mid-month. We'll see how I go, because it's a little bit challenging with the touring schedule as well, but and the schedule. But it has been really therapeutic for me just to kind of, you know, take stock of what are the things that I do have control over and what are the things that bring me a measure of peace.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, when all of our, I mean, the first thing that I understood was how fragile our sort of working class subsistence touring business model was, and how frail and easily undone it was, you know, when the lockdown happened. And we just were very lucky to have a community that kind of rallied around and helped us by coming to live streams and, you know, buying merch and things like that. And we had a dear friend who actually loaned us some money. And, you know, it was a real revelatory, like, our existence is more precarious than we want to admit that it is.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things I think about a lot too, in this country in particular. A lot of people who are working poor or working class want to think of themselves as middle class.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and folks that are middle class want to think of themselves as wealthy, and it's just often not the case. You know, many people are in a position where if there's 3 months without work, the reserves are gone. People are in a position where there are no reserves in the first place.
Yeah.
And so I think that we are seeing the, you know, the weaknesses of the system that has very little safety net or social safety net, you know?
Right. And that there's no shame to a social safety net. And I think that
all kinds of people need that in who didn't realize they did.
Yes. You know? Yes.
And who maybe have looked down upon the necessity for such in times past and have now realized their own vulnerability, you know?
Yes.
And I think that's a difficult thing to navigate. And then trying to figure out, what are the things we can do in this moment of lockdown, of uncertainty, and one thing that we could do is keep writing, you know, and we could keep trying to reach out to the community that we have found painstakingly over many years of touring and collaboration and, you know, forming meaningful, intentional coalition. And that was sort of what I relied on in the pandemic, was just reaching out to people, you know, who were further along a path, or maybe who might be willing to open a door or knock on a door for me. You know, I did that with my Outside Child record, where I just started sending it to people that I thought might be receptive to it. And that led to eventually my friend Brandy Carlisle calling Fantasy Records and saying, I think you should listen to this record. And that led to me being signed as a solo artist, you know, and which led to our being able to, you know, pay our rent and eventually our mortgage and, you know, make sure our child had good food and good medical care and all of the rest of it. Like that, you know, it changed, it lifted us out of pretty abject poverty, you know, in the middle of the pandemic, my record getting signed. And that happened through the channels of, you know, the circles of chosen friends and family, my artist community.
Yeah.
Kind of seeing and hearing me and choosing to help at a time when I needed it.
Oh, I just had my hands on my heart. I was like, oh my God. that web of support is something that is so vital and that I feel like is undervalued in, like, kind of the idea of, like, hustle and have no safety net. And it's all about the individual and, like, essentially, you had spoken to, like, that extreme individualistic freedom is actually death. And it's like, this is the opposite, where it's like, when we realize that we are interdependent, that's when we can actually, like, each, ironically, individually succeed by communally succeeding. Like when you come together in that web, like, I'm like, oh my God, first off, I'm so excited for you. I was just like, yes, that's like, that's juicy. But also I'm like, just noting that it's because of the connections that you made with other people and that other people valued that connection. And they were like, ooh, I value you and I value your art. Let me see what happens next. Let me give this to someone else. And it's like passing through all those little nodes.
That's right. Exactly. Right. And again, once again, it's like, we are not islands. We are interdependent completely and utterly. And that can feel scary, but it can also feel incredibly empowering and healing, and gives us all a measure of safety when we acknowledge that interdependence and those bonds with responsibility and care and mindfulness, you know?
Yeah.
It's such a diff. It doesn't have to be terrifying and awful. You know, we are family no matter what, and we get to choose, like, do we want to be really abusive and dysfunctional, you know, or do we want to try and treat each other as equals with loving care, you know?
Yeah. It reminds me of the human version. Yeah. It's like we have a choice. And like, I think about the default mode of, it's weird thought. Why is my brain like this? But like, of trees in a forest, because like trees don't really have the option of not being interconnected, because they're all connected like underground by like the entire like mushroom and fungus network.
Yeah.
That's literally where my brain went. I was just like,
your brain went there.
I was like, and trees, their default mode is just to get along with each other in the forest. They're like, well, cool, we're connected. That's why when people are like, how do the trees all grow the same way? I'm like, oh, they actually communicate through mushrooms.
Amazing. Are you familiar with the Sheldrake family?
No,
you would love. I don't know all of the dad is Rupert Sheldrake, and he is, I believe, I don't know if he's a chemical biologist. He's some kind of biologist, and he has a whole theory of morphic resonance, which is essentially this kind of transmission of knowledge between members of a species in ways that cannot be accounted for just based on language or observation, that there's a kind of an osmosis that occurs. And he observed this with crows, for example, or communities of starlings in the UK. Things like, if one group of crows figured out to throw a nut in the road and a car would drive over it, that within, you know, a shockingly short amount of time, like not enough time for members of that murder to have interacted with all of the other murders of crows know how to do it.
Know how to do that.
And so he has this whole theory of morphic resonance, and he kind of got, there's parts of the kind of academia or who kind of think of his theories as being sort of out there or woo-woo, but you know, he will argue, well, it's no different than how people thought about the idea of a field of gravity or a field of electricity in their, you know, before mm-hmm. that was well-established fact. And so he's interesting. And then his son is a mycology language of forests guy. And I believe his son's name is Merlin Sheldrake. I believe that's his name. And he is the language of forests and mushrooms expert guy.
Excellent. I will go find him. And that I could not imagine a more perfect name for someone who does that.
Isn't that wonderful? Merlin Sheldrake. Yes. It is really quite wonderful. Yeah.
Isn't there a musician, Cosmo Sheldrake?
Oh, maybe there is. There might be two sons. So I might be mixing them up. There may be more than one son. And I'm sure the other son would have a wonderful name like that.
I was like, if this is all the same family, I'm going to be just so.
I'm pretty sure. You know what? I'm going to look it up right now, because I'm pretty sure that it. Let me look up the Sheldrake family. They're extraordinary.
Oh my gosh.
There may well be two sons.
There may as well be two Sheldrakes.
Family.
Oh my gosh. And I'm like, can we be more like that and more like the trees where it's like,
there is a Cosmo. Is a Cosmo. Cosmo Sheldrake and Merlin Sheldrake. And I believe those are both the sons. Let's see.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So Cosmo is a musician.
I love this.
And his brother is the biologist, Merlin Sheldrake. So Merlin is the language of the forests and the trees, and Cosmo is a musician and a composer.
What?
And it's all the same family. Their dad is Rupert Sheldrake, and their mom is Jill Purse, and she's a voice teacher.
My goodness.
So children of a musician and a visionary biologist doing their lives. Yeah.
This is like the best. I love this. I love this so much.
They're a family I very much would love to meet one day. They fill me with hope for humanity.
Let's do it. Let's go on a journey. We're going.
Yeah.
Going on an adventure to meet the Sheldrakes. Yeah. They don't know it yet, but we know.
They don't know. kindred spirits.
Oh my gosh. I was like, that's more of what I want to channel, is that kind of that interwoven interconnectedness, because that kind of like serendipity and absurdity is, I don't know about you, but that's like what fuels me. Like, as long as I have like an instance of that at least once a day, I'm just like, yeah, we good.
We're good. We're on the right path. Yes. Absolutely.
Oh my gosh. That's probably where my creativity comes from, frankly, is that, like, you know, it's not something that one should necessarily be trying to chase. I find that if you try to chase creativity, it kind of goes, no, and runs away. Yeah. Whereas when you just are like, oh, I'm just going to let something happen. Like, I did not anticipate that somehow my brain would pull up the name Cosmo Sheldrake, because I don't know if I've even heard his music. I just remember that name.
It's a memorable name. It really is.
Yeah. It's stuck in my mind. And now I'm like, oh my gosh, now we get to go on an exciting adventure of exploring this family. And now we get to talk about like trees and mycology.
Great. It's so good. Well, we can learn so much. I mean, and this is the problem with our hierarchical thinking, you know, that this notion that we as humans are somehow in dominion over all the other living beings of the planet that we are completely dependent upon is a very toxic notion, I think.
Oh, yes.
And it leads us astray, and it causes us to not see the sort of teachings and wisdom all around us, including in how a forest communicates, you know.
Yes.
And I think that we are in a transitional period of our human evolution and our human family. I really think that. I think we're at a precipice where we are either going to evolve and start valuing expanding our consciousness more, and our connections and our empathy and our sense of responsibility and interwoven, interdependent interconnectedness with all the living things on our planet. Or we will continue on a self-destruct course, you know, because let's face it, there's a pattern of mass extinctions on our planet, and we are next in line if we don't get out of our tailspin.
That's what popped in my mind was, like, in behaviorism, there's the phrase extinction burst, which is when it's essentially like, and I'm sure you went through this with your kiddo, where like we sometimes turn to negative behaviors to try to get to a goal. Whether that be like whining or yelling or screaming or whatever it is, like tantruming. Yeah. And what you can do as like a parent, or as like parenting tip for people, if your kiddo is tantruming, align with them and say like, I see you're so upset. I hear you, but don't do whatever the thing is that they want you to do. Like, right. You can validate the emotion without like feeding the tantrum. It's like, and then when they see over and over again, like that this behavior is not going to get them the things they actually wanted, usually they stop, but they have what's called an extinction burst, where they might try amplifying that behavior.
Yeah.
And then once they find that that doesn't actually get them to their goal, they cease the behavior. And what helps them feel safe is that you're like, you're acceptable as a person. It's just that, you know, like screaming at me isn't going to get you what you want. And so then the person stops screaming after a while.
Yeah. I needed to hear that right now. I really did. We've been having some extinction bursts lately.
Yep.
About the strangest things. Toothbrushing, getting dressed in the morning.
Yes.
Really? We're back here? We were past this. I swear we were past this.
You're like, that's what's bothering you today?
That it's something else. Yeah, it's really upsetting you.
Exactly. It's like, you know, and sometimes even with kiddos, especially if you validate, like, you're really upset. Sometimes they're like, oh God, I am. And then they cry, and then then you comfort them and they're done. And so, cause maybe they're upset about something else, but like the way that they express it is, I don't want to brush my teeth now.
Right.
Yeah, it's basically helping a kid have vocabulary for what's going on when they're like feeling some big feels. Humans as a whole are kind of doing that right now, where we're having some pretty big feelings. And what popped in my head was, I was just like, it's going to be interesting to see like who survives the extinction burst. Cause like the people who are adapting to the circumstance, like you said, learning from our kids in a way, have a much better chance of survival, like psychologically and physically, than people who are resisting change.
That's right. And we're seeing it. I mean, we're actually seeing it play out in real time, which is just so, it's just tragic, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, we want to save the people who aren't wanting to be saved. And you're just like, don't you want to like get on the life raft? Like, there's a life raft.
There is. It's right here. It's free. Here. It's free. Yeah. It's all over the place. And there's every other country is desperate for this life raft.
Yes. Yes. And like, same thing with like alternative sources of energy and like different ways. Like, I love that you're growing a garden. I've been trying to figure out how to like, I actually found this really cool, it looks kind of like a space tower system of how to like grow vegetables at my place. Cause I live in a condo in West Hollywood. Like, I don't have
the space
where I could put a garden in, but I was like, how do I make it more sustainable? Like, I buy farm boxes, but now that I'm not, like, early in the pandemic, I was potted with a few friends. And it was like, for months, like, those were the only three people I saw. Which, boy, was that an experience. We were like, wow, this is like Gilligan's Island, but like the apocalypse edition.
It's such a fascinating, your relationships change.
And, oh my God.
How you value those relationships changes. And you realize it's a clarifier in a lot of ways, isn't it? Of like, who are the people I really, really want to manage to stay close to somehow.
Yeah.
Even if that's just checking in on Zoom every week, or it's, you know, whatever it is. It's a real clarifier. Like, who is actually, who are those chosen family members? You know, we all have them.
Yeah.
Who are they? And very quickly you realize when energy is sort of at a premium, when everyone's trying to kind of manage their levels of exhaustion and despair and grief.
Yeah.
You realize it's just a clarifying thing. Like, who is part of that? You know, we all have an inner circle of the people we feel really safe with and seen by and want to see, and, you know, all of that we resonate with in a deeper way, you know?
Yeah. And it's just gone. Going through something like that, I love that you said that, like, your sister and your chosen sister were there, and, like, that it's, like, I'm trying to even describe, like, it's not even necessarily, I mean, in some ways it's a trauma bond because you went through trauma together, but it's, like, there was something that, like, I wouldn't have, if you had told me to pick, like, my dream team, not that I don't love the people I was potted with, but like, we didn't know each other that well before we were potted. The reason why we potted is that we'd all been co-working together. We all are in creative fields and we'd all been kind of like all up in each other's biz, basically. If one of us has it, all of us do. Cause we've been like, we've been in very close proximity for like several days. That's, and we're true. Like, you know, our other option is like, we all kind of go it alone, but like, why not just be a team?
Yeah, it makes so much sense. That makes so much sense.
Yeah,
and of course.
Yeah,
and then you're in it, and then suddenly it's like a fascinating social experiment of, we actually didn't know each other that well, and now we are literally closer than most families have to be.
Yes, and it's like that bond. I'm curious how it changed like your relationships going forward. Now that like you can see other people, it's like, it's weird because in a way I will always have this bond with these three people. We all went through something so momentous together that there's this like little, like there's this tie between us that will never, like you can't untie it.
That's right. That's right.
And it's like this little magic spell. And like, I think about that in regards to, I love that you said that Your daughter at least had other adults to like bounce things off of, but like she didn't have other kids for a while.
No, and it was really hard for her. She got, there was a period in the lockdown where she was really upset with her dad and I for never having any other kids, you know.
Oh,
I'm my only child. And it was really heartbreaking. And then we broke down and got a rescue puppy.
Yes!
And that was, has been the most joyful for the whole family, you know.
Oh.
And the importance of having something that takes you out of yourself. It's the same for a child, you know.
There, yeah.
He was this being that needed her more than she needed to feel, you know, sorry for herself or upset for herself, right?
Mm-hmm.
This puppy needs love and care and guidance and walks and playtime every day, you know, it doesn't matter. And it just, yeah, it pulled all of us into a much happier emotional state. Just Neely's presence, you know?
Oh, that's, I was like in that pulling yourself out of that state. Cause like when you are writing, like first off, I'm like, oh my God, I'm really excited to read your memoir that you're in the midst of making. I was like, can it be done yet so I can read it?
I'm trying to work on it. I'm like, trying to keep at it every day.
Like, oh my God, I want to read it. But like that idea of taking yourself out of yourself, weirdly, like that actually helps with creativity. It's like you kind of have to forget yourself to create stuff a lot of the time.
Right, get out of your own way. My friend Kashana, I don't know if you know Kashana's music, she's incredible. She started out, and she still is, a music therapist, and she worked and continues to work closely with women who have been incarcerated and does songwriting programs with them as a way to, you know, process trauma.
Wow.
And that is how she began her songwriting career. Was she sort of came to it through music therapy, and she's a brilliant songwriter. She's featured on Adia Victoria's new record, which is a stunning record called The Southern Gothic, and she's featured on there. But she is such a graceful, wise person. And one of the things she mentioned the other day, we were doing a panel at Americana Fest, and she said that she has a mantra every time she goes on stage, and that's, you know, please let me get out of the way.
Because, I love that.
Isn't that beautiful? Because it's like, get out of the way. Don't get it of that, you know, that flow that can occur, that creative flow that can occur, you know, between someone presenting something and someone receiving it. And, you know, that is holy. There's something very sacred about that when we take too much kind of self-observation and ego and insecurity out of it. You know?
Yeah. Oh, that's a beautiful mantra. Someone who I don't know if it's like stage fright or a holdover from classical piano when I was a kid. I was like, but every time before I go on stage, I'm always like, is this the time that I forget how to like play the piano / sing / breathe / be alive? Question mark.
Yeah.
And needless to say, I haven't died yet from performing.
No. I can imagine that there would be a lot of residual anxiety around those. I've never been so scared for anyone as going to see my friends' recitals.
You know? No, my God. They were
the pressure of it and the competition element. To this day, it's like anathema to me, music as blood sport or competition. I just can't. I can't watch those shows. You know, the
like American Idol and like stuff.
Yeah.
Like that.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
I just can't do it. It really like upsets me, and I feel so awful for people. And they always, you know, this gratuitous camera in someone's face as they're sobbing and their dream is shattered, and cannot handle it.
Me neither.
It's like the opposite of what music is for me, you know.
Yes. Oh, you just articulated that so well. I couldn't figure out why it was that I didn't like those. And when you're a musician, I'm sure you've gotten the same thing where people are like, oh, have you ever thought about being on The Voice? And I'm just like, no. Go away.
You could not pay me enough to do it, I don't think. You know? Maybe you could test that out, but I don't think. You know, I was like, how much would it have to be to subject myself to something that like destabilizes and makes me feel like the, you know, that's the joy of life is gone.
Exactly.
Oh my God, it's like the joy of music is gone. It's an interesting thing. Even things like I have come to have a different feeling around awards ceremonies, because I've realized that competition is just a very super, it's not really about that, that it's really about a gathering of a community and a kind of a consolidating of a coalition and peers recognizing each other and uplifting each other. And like, that's really what it's about, you know, it, at its best, not the kind of flimsy notion of a competition of comparing, you know, apples and oranges, because how can you compare two artists? Really, ever, you know, so
that always confused me. I'm like, but everyone's their own thing. That's why we make stuff.
and the you know, it's, they can coexist, and it can be, you know, people take from it what they will. But what I've come to this, I was so grateful for that awards ceremony the other day here at Americana Fest last week. And because it, once again, similar to the Newport Folk Festival, it just felt like this beautiful, grateful family reunion, you know. I was so uplifted by so many of the performances and the other artists, and it was just a joyful thing.
That's beautiful. And I just, the getting out of your own way is so critical. I was just like, how do you get out of your own way? And I'm like, adopting a dog sounds like an excellent way to get out of your own way.
I highly recommend it. I highly recommend it. Yeah.
Oh my God. I just imagine, like, you know, before a set being like, all right, gonna walk the dog. That's gonna get me back to like normal levels, and then I can go and play.
Right. Little road dog. That's right.
Oh, such a beautiful sentiment. And like, in regards to even when you're on your own, like working, you know, in a way, it's interesting to think of the idea even of like working from home as a creative. Because that's kind of what we low key do all the time.
Yeah, exactly. I laughed about, you know, a lot of couples didn't survive the closeness of the pandemic, but for us, it was like, this is more space than we ever have. We were stuck in our van. You know, we were not doing glamorous touring. We were touring, you know, in the old Chevy or Ford Express or the Ford Express van or whatever, you know, so it was like all of us clumped together. And
oh my God.
Usually this is like, this is incredible. We have a whole house where I can go in one room, you can go in another. I can go outside, you can be inside, you know, so.
Oh my God.
It's more space than we ever have.
Exactly. And like that people weren't used to, in some ways, like the intimacy of being with each other. Like spoiler alert, my day job is I'm a therapist. And so like, watching people and being in this experience myself, like watching people realize like who they actually were intimate with and who they weren't, and also redefining that intimacy because of the circumstance, was like wild.
Yeah. it's just a whole thing, right?
It was this like bird's eye view of like, it's so interesting what you said, that you're like, from your perspective, you're like, wow, look at all this space. Whereas from other people's perspective, sometimes they were like, oh my God, I haven't spent this much time with my partner in years. And I just realized I don't really know my partner.
That's right. It's like, have we grown too far apart?
You're like, what's going on? Like for some people, it was really like a joyous time in a way to get to know their person, even with like, obviously like there was the, you know, radio static of horrifying stress. But like there was also joy in being like, wait, I actually get to spend the time to get to know myself and my people around me again.
Yeah.
Like we haven't had.
Yes. And that's beautiful too. Just the rediscovery of the importance of our interpersonal, like that's actually our wealth, is our interpersonal connections. That's the, because what good is any amount of wealth if you are alone and
yes,
have none of that outlet of, you know, just think some people that were just, and I don't mean just physically alone, but really not having those people that you can reach out to, or
yes,
people that you value so deeply and that value you, you know.
Yeah.
I think about that to me is the deep, the sort of the worst tragedy is the isolation that some folks have experienced who haven't, for whatever reason, been able to form those close relationships, you know?
Yeah. Like how you were talking about, like, and it was so poignant hearing about the journey of your album and being signed, that it really was because of those interpersonal relationships. And I can hear how much you really do feel for the people that don't have that. And I'm like, oh my God, I was like, how do we cultivate more of that for people? Because I agree, there's people out there who don't have that web. And I'm like, but everyone deserves the web.
No, they do. And I just think it's not valued enough. We don't speak of it enough as the importance of it. And I do think in America, there is such an intense emphasis on individualism that any sort of talk of the social fabric is seen as, you know, socialism, big S, communism, big C, you know, some sort of terrible red threat or something, you know? I think it has really skewed just the importance of community, you know?
Yeah.
And in the most basic sense of the word, we don't thrive without some form of community. We just don't. It's well documented, you know.
Pretty, I was gonna say it's kind of writ large over history that when people don't have community, that's when things go awry.
Yeah.
I'm like, yay for community. Yes. It makes us thrive. It makes us creative and empathetic, and those are really good things. When you said like socialism with a big S and communism with a big C, I was just like, yeah. And then there's the people that think that they're the same thing. They're not. There's also that confusion where I'm just like, what happened that there's a large swath of Americans that think that those are the same thing?
Yeah. It's so true.
I'm like, no, we just want to actually help each other all survive, because when we survive as a community, that benefits the individual too. Interdependence.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it has been an immense pleasure getting to talk to you.
Oh, you too. It's so lovely.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you liked what you heard, please head over to your preferred podcast platform and follow our podcast. You can also give us a 5-star rating or drop a glowing review. All of these things help more listeners to discover our podcast, and that means that then they can enjoy the wisdom of our wonderful guests. You can also come hang out with us on social media. We are on Instagram and TikTok under Why Not Both Podcast. Thanks again, and we will see you the next episode.